Present.
Chair Daines.
Present.
Representative Cotiza Watune.
Present.
Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Schultz.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll present.
Senator Dornick.
Present.
Senator Dreheim. Senator Dreheim.
Present.
Senator Utke. Senator Utke. Senator Klein.
Here. We do have a quorum if both bodies, so we have a quorum. Members, we are here today because there is a potential conference committee report for our consideration. What we will do is have a couple of procedural motions to get that report in front of us. Then we will have nonpartisan staff review the report for us, and then we will discuss and vote on the report. First, Senator Daines, would you like to move adoption of the conference committee report to get it in front of us?
So moved.
Senator Daines moves adoption of the conference committee report on Senate File 3472, House File 3717 to get before the committee. I will move the amendment coded A22-0401. We will now have nonpartisan staff walk through the amendment, starting with Ms. Pompu from House Research and Mr. Mum from Senate Fiscal.
Chair and members, Larry Pompu, House Research. I can walk through the policy provisions first and then allow Casey to do the fiscal portion of it.
Wonderful, Ms. Pompu.
So starting on page one, we have a transfer, which Mr. Mum will cover. Section two moves the operation of the premium security plan so that it operates between years 2023 and 2027. Section three involves private health insurance. It requires health plans to cover comprehensive postnatal visits at 3 weeks postpartum and 12 weeks postpartum, and any visits recommended by a provider in between those two dates. And that has an effective date of January 1st, 2023. Section four involves private health insurance. It involves prescription drug benefits. It requires that health plan companies offer individual and small group health plans that have a pre-deductible flat dollar copay structure for their silver and gold medal plans. New and added in conference committee is a system by which a health plan company has fewer than 75 enrollees in a gold or silver plan that meets these requirements. They can discontinue that type of plan. It requires them to notify enrollees, offer an alternative health plan on a guaranteed basis, and not take their decision, not take into regard anyone's health status as part of making their decision. They have to report to the Commissioner of Commerce about enrollment in these types of plans. And this is effective January 1st, 2024. On to Section 5. This changes the date by which funds in the Minnesota Premium Security Plan have to be deposited in the Healthcare Access Fund. It was at June 30th, 2024. This moves it to June 30th, 2029. We have a repealer in Section 40, which changes a date to 2024, and that relates to the transfer in Section 1 that Mr. Mum will be discussing. In Section 7, this sets up dates for health plans to file proposed rate filings for the 2023 benefit year. This section is effective the day following enactment. Section 8 involves transfers, which Mr. Mum will get into. Section 9, appropriations. It looks like those have a contingent appropriation in Section 9. Is contingent on the approval of the continuation of the state innovation waiver. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Pompu. Mr. Mum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll just briefly go through the spreadsheet summarizing the fiscal aspects of the bill. The amounts are to finance 3 years of the reinsurance program's operation, as well as costs associated with MinSure and MinnesotaCare resulting from the reinsurance program. If you're looking at the spreadsheet, the first item of attention is on line 5. These are two transfers from the general fund into the premium security plan account. The first is $300.092 million in fiscal year 23, and the second is a $229 million, $465,000 transfer in fiscal year 25. That's a total amount of $529,557,000. The second item is on line 17.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt. Do we have this? I'm sorry. Do we have this new spreadsheet? I don't think I've seen it.
I believe it was sent around by Mr. Brown shortly before the hearing, but I
got the bill language. I did not get a spreadsheet that I'm aware of. I guess I'd go back and look.
Let's take a look here.
Mr. Chair, if you would prefer, I can try to share my screen so that members would be able to view it.
I think we should make sure that members have the spreadsheet.
We do have it in email, but if you could share your screen, that might make it more convenient for us as well.
I think maybe both would be a good idea, Representative Schultz. But are we saying that, Representative Schultz, you have located it?
I do have it in front of me, yes.
Representative Liebling, have you located it?
I have not. I guess I'll have to open my other computer.
I will ask Mr. Brown to resend it to you so it's at the top of your email box.
Thank you.
Mr. Brown, if you could resend the email to conferees so it's at the top of their email box. And if you could enable Mr. Mum to share his screen as well, that would be helpful.
Will do, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Please proceed, Mr. Mum.
Okay, assuming that this is visible, the first item that I discussed was on line 5. These are the transfers that I just went through. These are from the general fund into the premium security plan account to pay for the operations of the reinsurance program through fiscal year 26. That's funding 3 years of the 5-year extension. The next item is on line 17. It is a $13.269 million transfer from the general fund into the MinSure Enterprise Fund. And this is to offset premium withhold revenue reductions to MinSure that would result from the reinsurance program's extension. The second item here is on line 18. These are transfer reductions to the amounts transferred under 16A724. That transfer is currently scheduled to expire after fiscal year 25. What the bill is doing, or the conference committee report is doing, is moving that expiration up in 1 year. So there would be a $122 million transfer in fiscal year 25 that would not occur. So that's counted as a $122 million cost to the general fund. And similarly, in fiscal year 24, the transfer amount is reduced to $70.215 million. The resulting difference between $122 million and $70.215 million is this $51.785 million that is counted as a cost to the general fund. And the rationale for this will make sense when I get down to the healthcare access fund expenditures. The total general fund costs are identified on lines 20 and 21. For the fiscal year, the current biennium, the total general fund cost is $313,361,000. And the general fund cost for the fiscal 24-25 biennium is $403,250,000. The total combined is $716,611,000. On line 24 are appropriations from the Healthcare Access Fund to MinnesotaCare to make up for expected revenue losses from the federal government for MinnesotaCare's operations. These total $347,570,000 over the course of the 4 years shown here. Of that total, half is paid for by reducing the amount of the transfer from the Healthcare Access Fund to the general fund. And that is on line 25. That is merely the inverse of the amounts shown on line 18. So it's shown as a cost to the general fund, but a savings to the Healthcare Access Fund, because the Healthcare Access Fund would no longer be required to make those transferred amounts. The net impact on the Healthcare Access Fund is that the other half of the appropriations for Minnesota Care just come out of the overall balance of the Healthcare Access Fund. So that's why the total amounts on lines 25 and 26 are identical at $173,785,000. Mr. Chair, that's all I had for a spreadsheet walkthrough.
And Mr. Munn, before you, on line 24, the appropriations out of the Healthcare Access Fund are contingent on the lack of federal action fixing the BHP problem. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, that is correct.
Right. So if there is federal action, the effect on the Healthcare Access Fund would be different. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Munn. So members, now that we have had the walkthrough, the next thing we will do is take what I am terming a procedural vote to adopt the amendment. This is not the vote to adopt the conference report. That comes later, but we will vote to adopt the amendment to have it properly in front of us, and then we will have discussion the conference report. All those in favor of adopting the amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. We will now have discussion to the conference report. Members, I will begin by saying that to me, this is a compromise. The House put forward a plan to do this differently. It would be our preference to not solve the problems we have in the individual market through reinsurance, but through a public option. And we have on many occasions made that clear. And we've passed that bill in the past, and that would be our preference. But we know that that is not the course of action that the Senate is prepared to take. So having said that, there are 167,000 people in the individual market. We need to make sure that they don't suffer catastrophic premium increases this fall. And I want to put that in context. I asked the Department of Commerce, because we talk about numbers, we talk about percentages, but what does this mean for real people? I asked the Department of Commerce to give me some real numbers, because we have now a lot of experience with reinsurance, and we can run models with our actuaries that can tell us what would happen without the operation of the reinsurance program. And they were quick to point out correctly that the impact depends on where you live, how old you are, whether you use tobacco, and what benefit plan you use. But they can provide us with a range from sort of an example of what is the least expensive and thus the least impacted person by reinsurance to the most expensive. So if you take a child who's in the metro, so the cheapest area of the state and the cheapest person to insure, they would pay about $2,000 a year for a bronze plan under the proposed reinsurance program parameters, but would pay approximately $2,500 a year in absence of the reinsurance program. So that's an annual savings of $500 a year for that child. At the other end of the spectrum, a 64-year-old tobacco user who lives in Rochester would pay $18,600 per year for a gold plan under the proposed reinsurance program, but would pay $23,200 per year in absence of the reinsurance program, for an annual savings of $4,600 a year per reinsurance. Both on a percentage basis and an absolute dollar basis, this is a very significant savings to Minnesotans that this program creates, and is for many people the difference between affordable healthcare and unaffordable healthcare. I'm also very pleased that we were able to agree on two important reforms in the bill. A bill brought to conference through work by Representative Bierman to provide stable copays, I think, is particularly valuable. Right now, you could have a plan that has people paying thousands of dollars a year in January and February for life necessary prescription drugs, which if you are living paycheck to paycheck on a bronze level plan, that is just not affordable. And we have seen people ration, self-ration, withhold the drugs they need, go without, make difficult decisions. But under the language that we are adopting today, that same individual will be able to get a plan for the same cost that spreads that burden out over the entire year. And again, if you're living the paycheck to paycheck, that is really important. And for the thousands of people in Minnesota who have those conditions that need those prescription drugs, that's very valuable. The second point that bill that is being brought in this agreement is a bill authored by Representative Richardson to increase coverage for maternal health. We've seen maternal health outcomes going poorly in recent years, particularly among women of color. And so I think this is very important, and I'm really glad it's in the conference committee report. Last, the bill does appropriate $174 million into the Healthcare Access Fund, ending a transfer that's in place for many years. We value the Healthcare Access Fund, and we'd like to see the balance increase. So that is a material value from the House's perspective. Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Zach, and certainly appreciate your outline of the bill and what it does. And I would concur with your comments there. Another thing that I really appreciate the fact that we're able to get together. This gives the marketplace some stability, and I know that the providers like to have that stability to know what they can look forward to in the future. And I think the insureds also like that stability because they know now that there will be at least three more years of health insurance that will have some support from the reinsurance part of it. With that said, I was glad that we could get together last night with leadership and get it worked out and move this forward. And so I'll leave my comments there.
Thank you, Senator Daines. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, I had a question for nonpartisan staff when we did the walkthrough on the language piece. I thought I heard something about a new provision that had not come, I don't think was in either of the base bills, but maybe I'm wrong about that. And that had to do with discontinuing gold plans that had few people in them. And I wonder if I could just get some clarification on that.
And you, yes, Representative Liebling, and I'll provide some context for that, and then I'll hand it over to nonpartisan staff so they can verify and add anything else. This relates specifically to the plans that are offered under the Bierman proposal. So under those plans offered under the Bierman proposal, there is a modification to the guaranteed renewability law in order that if very, very, very few people sign into them, the plans after a period of time would be able to discontinue them under certain circumstances. Ms. Pompeo, would you have further comment on that?
No, Mr. Chair, I think that covers it.
But this Representative Liebling, this relates only to plans authorized under the Bierman proposal. Representative Liebling.
Okay, well, that's helpful, Mr. Chair. And so that's a modification to the Bierman proposal.
Correct.
I assume that was not heard in the House and not considered elsewhere, but
correct.
Understood. It has a limited applicability. Okay, so I understand that. So I feel compelled to also make some comments about this deal. I do not support it. First of all, I think members know, Republicans know, Democrats know that I and many of my colleagues, many of my Democratic colleagues in the House consider reinsurance to be basically a bridge to nowhere. And we keep extending the bridge and it's still a bridge to nowhere. What we're doing here, first of all, I appreciate Representative Stevenson's talking about people who can't obtain, who struggle with paying for the very, very high cost of health insurance. That is indeed a real thing. But let's be very clear, health insurance is not health care. Health insurance is not health care. Even people who we can drive down the cost of the premiums all we want, and a lot of people still can't afford to get the care when they need it because of the out-of-pocket costs. So let's be very clear about that. The Bierman bill help some people who have a particular kind of problem to spread out their payments over a period of time. That's all good. That helps a few people. That does nothing about the cost of care. It does nothing about the ultimate cost of drugs. It does nothing about the share of those pharmaceuticals that is being borne by those people. Nothing, zero, zip. It just helps them spread it out and do their budgeting a little bit better, which I grant you is a very important for some people, but ultimately doesn't really solve much of a problem. The Richardson bill that is included here indeed is also very, you know, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. We all want, I think we all want, women who've given birth to get, and their infants to get, the best possible care. We are all for that. Actually, it's rather shocking to me that this isn't already something that happens all the time, that any insurance company would now be denying to pay for visits for women who are being told that they need a visit, or where their physician thinks they need a visit, is absolutely shocking. So while this is a good thing, I don't think it does a lot. And my understanding is that under the public programs, this is already covered. So I don't think that there's been much of a give here, frankly, from the Republicans on this bill. I want to talk just a little bit about the things that the Republicans have refused to accept that were in our bill. And I want to say again, doing reinsurance, extending the bridge to nowhere, is a big give from the House DFL, a big give. And in this, I think we've gotten far too little in this. This does nothing in many, many ways. So first of all, there's a very good provision in the House bill that would hold insurance companies accountable for mental health parity. This is already the law, And the House proposal to add some enforcement to that was rejected by Republicans. So I guess it's okay to have it in law that we're going to hold the insurance companies accountable, but we're not going to hold their feet to the fire when they don't. So I guess parity, mental health parity that's in law, that's supposed to be the law, that is so important right now, especially when we know that there are many, many folks have a lot of struggles with mental health and getting their mental health treatment they need, but we're not going to hold insurance feet to the fire, insurers. Companies. There was a report in here, just a report that has to do with what would it look like if we could get the insurance companies out of our public programs. I and frankly, many Republicans in the House, I don't know what the talk is in the Senate, but in the House, many Republicans share my concern that the insurance companies who manage our public programs are not giving us a good deal. We spend billions and billions of dollars there with very little accountability for the public, to the public, and not getting what we think we're getting. And legislators have very little opportunity to really understand what's going on there because of the way this thing is run. So asking to have a report, just a report, was too much for Republicans to agree to, I guess. Then there's a public option proposal in the bill, which Republicans, again, completely rejected. We've never heard a real Republican idea about how we're actually going to make sure people can get health care or hold down costs of health care. No, it's all about insurance, insurers, what we should give insurance companies. And this public option proposal, which would give us a potential, it's just a, you know, let's develop something and come back to the legislature and see whether it would work for people. But no, Republicans rejected that as well. So, Mr. Chair, all of these things have been rejected by the Republicans. And yet in this deal, there are millions and millions of public dollars put again towards supporting insurance companies. Sure, it'll bring down the cost of insurance for some people somewhat. One of the examples that was given by the chair, if I got it right, was like from $23,000 to $18,000 a year. Oh my goodness. I mean, $18,000 is pretty darn unaffordable right there. So, you know, it just makes it maybe a little less unaffordable, it might control some of the sticker shock. We're spending many, many millions of taxpayer dollars to get that marginal effect, whatever it is. And under reinsurance, we don't even know what it's going to be. And people who are getting the insurance are not going to know. And then finally, I do want to say, the reason there are more people right now, as I understand it, the reason there are more people in the marketplace now, in the small group and individual market, is because of the Biden administration's premium support, which has been capping people's out-of-pocket costs at, I believe it is 7% of their income. And that has worked very, very well. If people know that they won't have to spend more than 7% of their income, that is a great thing. And we could be doing that on the state level. We could, and if Republicans in the US Congress and the US Senate in particular would be willing to do it, we could extend it from the federal level too. That's in the Biden Build Back Better plan. But no, instead of that, what we're doing is giving money, more buckets and buckets of public money to insurance companies with very little accountability. And that, Mr. Chair, I cannot support. Thank you.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and members. I also have concerns with this proposal. We have dropped the study language for healthcare delivery reform that many of our members, that's why they voted for the bill off the House floor. We have dropped the proposal to look at a solution at the end of this bridge. This is still a bridge to nowhere. We need to build that solution. We can't keep putting general fund money, taxpayer money, into subsidizing health plans. I think there's got to be a better solution. We need to start looking for that now, not later. Those pieces are very important, and I am very disappointed that they're not in this package. The other thing is, I don't know what our caucus is getting for reinsurance, because if the federal government fixes the BHP formula, we're not really getting a lot by putting money into the healthcare access fund. So I have real concerns that I don't see a win for many individuals in my caucus to support $890 million subsidy to the health plans.
Okay, Senator Drahan. Senator Drahan, I at least cannot hear you. I don't know if others cannot as well. You're not muted, but you might be having some microphone difficulties. I'm still not hearing you. I'm going to go to Senator Klein. I'll try and come back to you, Senator Drahan. Senator Klein.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to speak to a couple aspects of the bill. You already spoke very clearly about the impact this would have on premium rates for the 167,000 individuals who are currently in this market. I share the general sense that this is not a solution to our healthcare costs or to our healthcare delivery in the state of Minnesota. It is, however, the solution before us, and it will prevent pain to those individuals whose rates otherwise would go up considerably in October of this year. Other proposals have been put out there. Representative Liebling referred to the federal tax credits to buy down premiums with advanced premium tax credits. And I did author a bill this year that would do that at the statewide level and bring them down to 5% in the state of Minnesota to individuals. So we do have proposals out there that can replace this over the 3 years that we've paid for it in its current form. I wanted to speak specifically, Mr. Chair, just about one of the policy proposals, because as a physician, I think it's going to have a significant impact on my patients, and that is the flat copays provision from Representative Bierman. I can speak personally that I have individuals who have very high deductibles at the start of their year and who are forced to pay, you know, $8,000 or $10,000 in January and February of the year for medications that are life-saving and necessary. And it does lead people to hard financial decisions about whether to continue those medications or make other choices in their lives. Those individuals have organized, they have advocated, they have appealed to us. I can speak personally about an individual I know whose boy had childhood cancer Had very expensive medications that were unaffordable in January and February of the year. Passing this provision today will give immediate and very real relief to those individuals. It will help Minnesotans, and they will be grateful. So those are my comments, Mr. Chair, and thank you.
Try Senator Dreheim again. Okay. Senator Dreheim?
Can you hear me now?
I sure can. Thank you.
Okay, sorry about that. I apologize. I wanted to start, Chair, by first thanking you and Senator Deans for your hard work on this. I know most of us wish we didn't have to do this, but it is a reaction to the federal government and what's happened over the years and what gaps we have for care across Minnesota, and especially in my district, you know, the rural areas, a lot of small mom and pop businesses, a lot of farmers. This is very important. I know we've been emulated in other states. I know Congresswoman Craig has proposed proposals on the federal level emulating this reinsurance. So I think it is the best option we have. So once again, I just want to thank you. But it is a win for those farmers and small business owners out there. It really isn't about us or the House. It's about them. And like most votes up here, it's the best option that we have. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dreheim. Representative Katiza Watum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also would like to start off by thanking you for all the work that we've done in committee so far this session and for your leadership on reinsurance, among other things. Members, we know that reinsurance isn't a perfect program. My constituents have deep concerns that I share about the lack of oversight and accountability of usage of these state funds. Throughout years of discussion, we have yet to reach a better compromise to allow every Minnesotan access to high quality and affordable healthcare. This conference committee started at an impasse. The agreement before us today is lacking. It lacks my expansion of the board of directors, ensuring that Minnesotans have more of a voice at the table with the health plans. It lacks the mental health and substance abuse parity accountability office. It lacks the delivery reform analysis report. These proposals are meaningful to Minnesotans. They're meaningful to my constituents. These proposals would have contributed to a more holistic framework of where we go from here. But as a relatively new mother, the inclusion of expanded postpartum visits is also meaningful. As someone who has experience living paycheck to paycheck, the inclusion of stabilization of prescription drug copays is meaningful. As someone who lost family health insurance coverage at college graduation prior to the implementation of the Affordable Care Act and had to enter the private market, the fact that we are continuing to fund this imperfect solution while we continue to work on a better option is meaningful. I've told my constituents from day one that I cannot and will not agree to a blank check to the insurance industry. I've supported the continuation of reinsurance with hesitation, with incremental improvements. This compromise is lacking, but the policy inclusions within are incremental and meaningful, and this imperfect solution will help Minnesotans. We must continue to work together to find a more permanent solution for everyone across the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Katiza Watum. Representative Schultz, did you have something?
Yes, given the comments, I would like to make a motion to recess.
No need for a motion. I take your suggestion. We will have a brief recess to the call of the chair. I will give at least 15 minutes notice. The committee is in recess. I will call back to order this meeting of the Conference Committee on Senate Files 3472 and House File 3717. We were in discussion. I see no members seeking recognition at this moment. And absent any members wishing to speak, we will move to a vote. Senator Deans renews his motion that to adopt the Conference Committee report to Senate File 3472 and House File 3717 as amended. Mr. Dockendorf will take the roll.
Beginning with the Senate, Chair Deans.
Aye.
Deans, aye. Senator Dornick.
Aye.
Dornick, aye. Senator Dreheim.
Aye.
Dreheim, aye. Senator Utke.
Aye.
Utke, aye. Senator Klein.
Aye.
Klein, aye. From the House, Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Representative Cotizza-Watoon.
Aye.
Cotizza-Watoon, aye. Representative Liebling.
No.
Liebling, no. Representative Schultz.
No.
Schultz, no. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll votes aye.
O'Driscoll, aye.
There being five ayes and zero nays among Senate conferees and three ayes and two nays among House conferees, the motion prevails and the conference committee report to Senate file 3472, House file 3717 as amended is adopted. Members, we will have nonpartisan staff prepare the conference committee report and the reviser will circulate it to all of you for electronic signatures so we can pass the bill off both floors. Please be watching your email very closely so we can move expeditiously. Thank you. And with that, the committee is adjourned.